where would university be if it wasn't for the state? And when I first came in and with Burton and with Dewey, the first financial aid to City University was made available by the state. And that was primarily, at that time, just for the support of teacher education in the beginning. Because they said, well, we support teacher education upstate, therefore we should support teacher education in New York City. And
well, that was before the four colleges, then, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's all.
City of
yeah,
college. And,
but that was the initial support, other than for community colleges.
Yeah.
And so that got the foot in the door. And then eventually, of course, like now, the state pays for the full cost. The city doesn't make any contribution towards, other than for community colleges. In the four bureaus, the state now provides 100% of the cost. Well, obviously, the Democrats who were in control of the assembly and come primarily from New York City, and they also realized that a lot of their sons and daughters go to state colleges, not city university. We've now got a base of support in the legislature and in the party that are, well, you know, with Warren Anderson, leader in the Senate, well, my God, you know, State University of Binghamton means a lot to him.
Yeah.
It's come a long way. Yeah. And you never would have gotten, you would never, if it hadn't been for Warren Anderson and Hinman, you never would have gotten the State University of Binghamton to become a university center.
H-I-N-M-A-N, Hinman?
Yeah. Well, see, he was on our board. He was also on the Board of Regents.
I see.
And he fought the State University initially. But then he was Rockefeller's personal lawyer. His family lawyer. Mm-hmm. And then he dropped off our Board of Trustees. He and Anderson and Rockefeller, they dragged a reluctant Harper College into becoming a university center. Because Barrow never really wanted to be a university center. Like, and I imagine having an engineering college there, but I can't have a terrible. Makes sense. And it's, they realize the importance of it to that area. Just like Stony Brook is important to Long Island. You know, how in the long run it would be terrible not to have a major university center out in the middle of Long Island, or, you know, in that tremendous community.
You've got 3 or 4 million people on the island.
Right.
Best of the two in the two west eastern counties.
Right.
Well, do you think there is any viewing by the trustees of Stony Brook as a national university rather than a New York State university?
I doubt it. I mean, that's just my guess. I mean, I think they want it to become. I think they want it to become an important national university, but an important New York State national university. I don't. I still think, on the whole, in New York, they're quite parochial. You know, I mean, politically, you know,
the disciplines, the sciences, the humanities, and the social sciences are organized on a national basis. They have annual meetings. different parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that the people in physics, or the people in history, or the people in English do not think of themselves as belonging to a state subdivision of the discipline.
Oh, well, I think that's true, and I don't think they should feel differently than that.
No.
I because after all, you're recruiting from a national or international base.
Absolutely.
That's inevitable, and I would think that the trustees would recognize that. And I think, in a sense, they recognize it now, and they're seeking for a new president. Because I'm sure that they are going to try to get a person of national stature, as far as the chancellorship is concerned. I'm sure of that. Because they had that objective when they got Wharton.
Yeah.
And of course, they went to a major state university when they recruited.
Was it Michigan State?
Michigan State. He was president of Michigan State. Yeah.
Michigan State has 18,000 acres.
Yeah.
I was trying to get Herb Gordon and the central administration to take more land than the 480 acres that we started with in 62. And I succeeded, I think, on the whole, getting some of that done.
Yeah.
But every now and then came back, we're not in the land bank business. Which meant that somebody's view of it stopped 10 years down the road instead of 50.
Yeah. Well, that's always been a problem for State University. We in the development of our master plans and in the land acquisition program that went with it, we always had a terrible job selling the budget office particularly the budget office on the necessity of buying land. Which we felt eventually was going to be needed.
Years. Yeah.
Every day of time, they would wait, and then they'd have to pay 3-4 times as much as they would have if they bought it years before. But that's always been a major problem with the university. Now they've got that problem with the University of Albany. They certainly got that problem down at. State University of Binghamton. My God, that campus is...
They're surrounded by the hills.
Yeah, well, they're just choked in there. Well,
I think we were lucky to get to roughly 1,100.
Right.
But we could have gotten there before the developer.
Yeah. Well, Buffalo has got... they're still going to have a land problem there, because I don't know how long they can continue to operate on a divided campus basis. That's awfully hard to do.
I suppose somebody's taking that. Mm-hmm.
You want me to answer?
Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Tommy Rowland.
Yep.
Good to see you both. Fine, thank you.
Good.
I'll see you later.
All right, fine.
Well, we're going over a lot of history, Marcia.
Well, as I told Carl, I can't really speak about it but I have all of Mr. Moore's files. So.
Yeah, well, I told him that one of the things that I thought he ought to do to verify a lot of these things would be. And I thought the best record of what's happened is in the minutes of the board.
Oh, I don't think so.
You don't? I think in the early days it was.
Well, it could be. I mean, they're available, of course. But.
Well, what I'm saying is that the board did all the major vital decisions.
Well, yeah, the major decisions.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Were made by the board and would be spelled out in the minutes.
Yeah, but a lot of the in between and the nitty gritty would have to come from people's memories, I would think.
Well, that's true.
The stuff in the minutes would give you ideas.
Yeah, right.
And leads.
Well, I just said this is something they could use to verify some of the
people's memories.
As to when it happened.
2 o'clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fine. Thank you.
I'm gonna cut you short. What time is it?
10 minutes to 12.
10 minutes to 12.
I don't want to tire you out.
Oh no, I'm not tired. I don't mind. I'd be glad to answer any more questions.
All right. Let's take a look at 14.
Okay.
I had the feeling that in the initial days, the initiative for the establishment of Stony Brook came from the central office and the trustees. It came from Albany.
Mm-hmm.
As we got going and got people on the faculty and in the administration with ideas, and especially from the standpoint of the problems, immediate problems on the campus and how they were to be solved,
mm-hmm.
there was a period when initiative was coming both from Stony Brook and from the central office, and that the people in Albany were dependent upon us for telling them what was needed, what the problems were, and how we thought they could be solved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then more recently, let's say with the toll era, more of the initiative came from Stony Brook than came from the central office. In other words, it was a gradual shift. And that's a hypothesis, and that I'd be glad to have you comment on it. Framework was certainly established.
Let me put it this way. I can't really speak for the last 10 or 15 years because I haven't been with the university during that time. But I do know back during the prior to that time, the real problem was. There was with Toll and people, there was a certain lack of confidence, you know, with him.
With Toll?
Yeah. Not in terms of, but he wasn't a good person with good ideas, but they weren't related, I think, in a lot of people's minds some of the practical problems that had to be dealt with in order to accomplish what the objectives were.
You had problems up here with what he was trying to do.
Right, right.
As well as, yes.
And there were a lot of problems on a day-to-day administrative basis with managing something that was grown that fast, you know.
Okay.
And there were just growing pains involved, whether they be water problems, heating problems, taking care of the property problems, you know, those kind of problems. Financial control problems. You know, it was a heck of a job for somebody to try to keep operable and under control. As you know, the business affairs of any enterprise growing that fast, and trying to computerize itself along with it.
Yeah.
All of which created a lot of difficulties, not only for Stony Brook, but for the central administration as well, because I know that central administration, in a sense, without any question, had to divorce itself of the much tighter and more intimate relationship with the campuses than they had at one time. You just can't continue to operate that way.
That's right. You can't set up a second administration at the level of day-to-day operations.
Right, that's right.
You can't do that.
You can't do that.
You're paying people to handle the situation locally.
That's right.
I understand that what was the deal with Pellegrino and the establishment of the Health Sciences Center? You had two very vigorous individuals.
Right.
And they were not really able to work together in tandem, so to speak. I remember I had been on the job in the fall of 62, about 1 or 2 months, and two men came into the office. One was Malcolm Mueller of Newsweek, and the other was Lester Evans of the Commonwealth Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And they and one other, the Surgeon General, Paran, had been appointed by the governor and the regents to go into education for the health sciences. And they explained that they were looking for an institution which was growing, rather than one whose administrative structure was in concrete and which would presumably not accept a new growing program such as mm-hmm. the Comprehensive Health Sciences Center. And so they had come to Stony Brook to look it over. And I got our graduate council together and talked to them and about what we were doing. And I'd been a member of Board of Trustees of St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids, and also on the board of the School of Nursing in the Geisinger Center in Pennsylvania. And we talked for quite a while, and they seemed to think that Stony Brook was going to make it, and the next year the report came out that two comprehensive health sciences centers should be established, the first one to be established at Stony Brook. I don't know whether you remember that or not.
But that was the beginning of the thinking about putting one at Stony Brook. And when the report came out down on the island, there was competition from one of the hospitals, Meadowbrook Hospital. Mm-hmm. They felt that the center should be there because they had the hospital already. And Lee Dennison, county executive, said, well, we've got the university. Put the hospital next to the university. So that was fought back and forth. Then we got in Pellegrino to take the lead.
I don't know. I don't know that I know a lot of people have made over the years a indication, and this came in a sense first at at Buffalo, where they said it was very important to have the medical school faculty and the medical school have a relationship with the other people in the university, particularly where you had graduate programs in the science. And they made a big to-do about this. And also that the that it was important to have the hospital facilities, the teaching hospital facilities on campus. That's never been true at Buffalo. The hospital facilities are still primarily, they don't have a teaching hospital really of their own on campus. They were going to take over the Veterans Hospital there and do that there. That was one of the arguments originally. It never has taken place. I don't know what the ultimate answer is going to be there. They have the University Hospital downtown and then arrangements with others in that area downtown there for the medical school, but there never were any real close relationships between the science people on the campus of Buffalo and the medical school at any time. And of course, at Upstate Medical School, they don't have relationships with
Syracuse
in that respect, and downstate the same way. And you take other medical schools, like Cornell, nowhere near the Cornell campus.
Yeah, it's those situations that probably have sparked the other thinking that it would be better if they had closer relations.
Well, but I don't see where there's any proof to that effect, you know.
Can't prove it unless you have the other
situation. Yeah, right. Yeah, and I think that it's theoretically I think it makes sense, but the only thing that I can say is it's a strange medical school faculties tend to be damn independent. I don't know that this, some of the element, it's just a personal conclusion is, I don't think it makes that much difference.
I think that there is a tendency among the disciplines for people to stay within their rather specific field of question asking and answer seeking. And how you engineer bringing people together across disciplinary lines if they don't have the mind that seeks that sort of relationship is a real problem. It's a real administrative problem.
You take the University of Rochester with their medical school, and they in the rest of the university are very close together physically, but there is no real close relationship professionally between the faculty. In the biological sciences, or particular, as you would think there would be, or in the fields of psychology, and you've got here a situation at the Albany Medical School, you know, completely independent type of operation, and I don't know how important that is, and I don't know how it's working out at Stony Brook. I think what you say is that is an objective that you should certainly try to seek to achieve, and it would help.
I think we have association among minds, as well as association within a single mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right, is and. Simply mathematically, you expand the number of times when new ideas can be achieved. Mm-hmm. If you expand the number of minds that can actually meet orally,
right,
not necessarily in the literature,
right.
So, but I think that's really the function of deans.
Yeah.
I was the dean for 10 years in smaller institutions, but I made it my job to see that the faculty got together, and I could pick people who ought to talk to each other because they were pretty close to each other's thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. That's very true. Yeah. And of course, this even happens. With chairmen of departments, to get the department people to talk to each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, right now, the humanities don't have a home.
Mm-hmm.
They are in five different locations on the campus.
Yeah, that's too good. Mm-hmm.
And they started out by putting two of the sciences closest to the library.